Welcome to GoPro, How to Become a Network Marketing Professional by Eric Warden. You are now listening to CD 1, which is titled My Story.
Okay. All right. Very enthusiastic crowd. How's everybody doing? Amazing, amazing. Well, listen, we've got a great 8 hours to spend together. We're going to spend some time together. I hope you have some notes. I hope you have something to be able to capture this day. We are recording it for audio cassette. Audio cassette. Boy, did I just age myself there. Audio CD and for download online. And I will tell you, for all of the people who are listening in your automobile or listening on your iPod or listening on whatever device on your computer or wherever you're listening, you're here in spirit. I'm glad that you're here. I want to congratulate you for making the commitment to be able to get this program and to be able to invest in your learning, invest in your future, invest in the network marketing profession, the greatest profession in the history of the world. There's nothing better. There's no better way to be able to go out there, make a living, to be able to go out there, have an impact, to be able to go out there, leave a legacy, than what we have in our hands. And today is about learning how to become a network marketing professional. And there's a difference between the posers, the amateurs, and the professionals. Now, I want to talk about that in part of this first program. I'll tell you up front, I'm not a big rah-rah guy. I'm not going to be, you know, getting everybody jumping on their chairs and putting chandeliers on their heads and, you know, chanting the name of their company and any of that kind of stuff. I'm a person that my style is I'm not a big motivator. I think the best motivation comes from education. The best motivation comes from a good game plan. If you had a road map and you believed it to be true, or a treasure map and you believed it to be true, you wouldn't need a lot of motivation to get through the treasure map. But if you don't have the map and you get involved in this business, and the best way I've heard it described is you get involved, and we're happening to do this in San Francisco, California, but when you wake up in the morning, you see this fog. And when people join network marketing, there's this fog that they step into. And they can just barely see. And it doesn't inspire confidence. It inspires fear. And as they take a step, slowly the fog starts to lift. But my best wish is that they take a step in the right direction. That they don't take a step in the wrong direction. Because as they take a step in the right direction, it gives them the ability to take the next step and the next step and the next step and the next step. And I will tell you, I'm going to say this up front, and I'm going to say this a lot of times over the course of these 8 hours, is I'm going to ask you to forgive yourself as we start the day. Because it's going to be a huge urge for you to be able to say, oh my gosh, if I would have known that, I wouldn't have destroyed my warm market. If I would have known that, my organization would be 3 times bigger than it is today. If I would have had that key to success, oh my gosh, I am now furious at my upline for not telling me what you're telling me right now. Understand, all of us have gone through the same thing. So resist the urge and understand that you're here today for a reason today and ready to be able to move forward today, independent of anybody else, to be able to create your future. Okay? So if you can adopt that, forgive yourself, and every time you're feeling like, oh, and you start thinking about the people that you how am I going to try and reel them back in because I screwed it up or I didn't get them started right or I approached somebody wrong or whatever, just forgive yourself and understand it's all part of the learning experience. If you're brand new and you're listening to this, thank your lucky stars that you have a decreased chance of going through the same pain. I say decreased because it's not 100%. Almost everybody who joins has some flash of brilliance at some moment in time, and they think they're going to know how to do it better than the people who've already made millions, and they're going to say, yeah, I know they don't do that, but I'm just going to put my little wrinkle on it. And then 6 months later, they're going to be saying, oh my gosh, if I only hadn't have done that, all right, I'm going to be able to figure it out. So we do our best, but understand all of this is part of our journey. Now, there's many, many different companies. Inside of the Network Marketing Pro community, there's an estimated about 80 different companies that participate and plug in and communicate with each other in a very kind of brotherly, sisterly way, not to recruit each other, but just to have peers in our profession. And all over the world, too. We have, you know, this will be translated into many, many different languages. And in this room, I think we estimated we had something like 17 different countries represented just in this room. So there's going to be a lot of jargon, translate jargon. There's a lot of specific language that you use in your company that's going to be slightly different in another company. You know, what one group calls a meeting, the other group will call a briefing, and the other group will call a mixer, and the other group will call a party. So don't get hung up on that. The jargon is going to change. I want you to focus on the concepts. The concepts will set you free. You can adapt to whatever jargon or translation in your part of the world in order to be able to make that happen. My goals for this program is that you learn to become independent. That you learn to become independent in this business. You are no longer dependent on an upline. You are no longer dependent on someone else to show up and make you become what you could become. You're no longer dependent. You are now independent. You have the ability to grow your business. You're not counting on anyone else. You'll utilize other people as a resource, but you don't need them after this program. And I'll tell you, listening to this once, taking notes with it once will help you, but it's not the end. When I started to listen to Jim Rohn audio cassettes, the number one Jim Rohn audio cassette for me was Challenge to Succeed, and it was a 3-hour audio program, and I'll tell you, I listened to that audio program 100 times all the way through in my 20s. I've listened to it probably 300 times all the way through to be able to help it make something more of me, and it has. And that's the same thing that's going to help here. Spaced repetition, being reminded, oh yeah, being reminded, oh yeah. As you listen to this program once, you're going to get a benefit. When you listen to it again, you're going to hear things you didn't even hear the first time. Partly because you're going to be listening, you know, you might not be as distracted, but the bigger reason is you're different the next time you listen to it. And then you listen to it again and again, and then you're different. And then you'll start using some of the words, and then you'll start using some of the concepts. And as you practice those, that will make you different again. Incorporating this into your DNA. Does that make sense? Okay. So if you're with me, say, I'm with me. That didn't even make sense. So, goal number one is that you become independent. Goal number two is that you use this information to face your fears. The number one block we have in network marketing is fear. Fear of rejection, fear of doing something new, fear of being in business for yourself, fear of going against the crowd. Fear. Number three, that you get the leadership abilities and skills necessary to be able to not only get yourself started, but to be able to recruit. That's the biggest block to get somebody in the business. A lot of people think that's the number one skill. It's not. It is an important skill. It's a gateway skill. It'll get you in the game, But then we have to learn how to get duplication happening in the organization. It's a completely different skill. And then we have to learn how to have leadership development happening inside the organization. It's a completely different skill. So we're going to be talking about all those things. As we start this, let me start by sharing a little bit of my story, because some of you might be saying, who is this guy, and why does he think he has answers? And I'm going to share some of that with you. I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the United States, and I have a great family. I have a great mom and great dad, and they're still together today, and I have two brothers and two sisters, and we grew up in a loving family. We never went without food. We never really got to eat what we wanted, but we never went without food. My dad was a pastor and never took a salary as a pastor, so he was always buying and selling cars and, you know, just scrambling to stay alive. We heated our house with wood in Minnesota, which made me hate wood. I'm not kidding. Every day after school, oh my gosh, we got to chop wood, we got to stack wood, we got to throw wood down the little battered window into the basement. And we'd have to stack it in the basement. Then we'd have to get up in the middle of the night. We'd have to throw it into the fire in order to be able to stay warm. And I just hated it so much. I will tell you, the thing that I use to describe my family, outside of a loving family, is we were always looking to cut corners. If we could cut a corner, we were cutting it. If there was the thing that would light our family up is a garage sale. If there was a sale at the store, oh my gosh, they'd go crazy. There was a thing back at that time called old-fashioned bargain days, which was downtown Minneapolis and Dayton Hudson stores. They would just basically liquidate everything. And here we were, brought down by our parents, face squished against the glass, waiting for them to open the door so we can get, you know, a shirt for a dollar, right? And I remember hating that so much. This fact of hoping to get the scraps, the things that nobody else wants out of life, and then being happy about it. Because my family was proud of it. They say, you like this tie? Got it for a dollar. You know, 20 for a buck. It's like, you don't need to say that. Why do you need to say that? I hated that. Don't say it. You know, just if they say like it, say thank you. Leave it there, for crying out loud. Help me out. Right? And here's the visual picture I had in my mind. If you've seen these movies where there's the king and the queen and the prince and the princesses and the whole royal court, and they're all around a huge banquet table, and you can just see the table mounded with food. And they're enjoying this great thing. And here's me and my family under the table, hoping for something to roll off the edge. Here's a chicken wing. Chicken wing, I got a chicken wing. Don't talk too loud. They're up there. There's a chicken wing. How much you get this chicken wing? I got it for free. Yeah, but you had to sit under the table. That's how I felt. And I remember, I have one of my old high school buddies who's in the room. I remember back at that time that the item of clothing that was a must-have was Levi's red tag jeans. That was a absolute must. And my father refused to buy them. $20. $20 for a pair of blue jeans? Are you out of your mind? And I'll never forget, one day he comes to our house and he brought me 10 pair of Rustler Irregulars. Which is an oxymoron. It's, to have irregular rustler jeans, 10 pair at $4 a pair. I was like, Dad, you just don't get it. You just do not get it. I've asked for forever. Buy me one pair of Levi's red tag jeans, and I will wear them out. I won't grow, I promise. But instead, you spend $40 on 10 pair of Rustler irregular jeans. And we had one of the biggest fights we ever had. He said, you're living in my house. You don't have a job. Yeah, I'll put the clothes on you that I decide to put on you. You want to change it? Go change it. I wasn't ready to change it at that moment. So I sat and complained about it. But that was kind of our upbringing, right? So people respond. You know, brothers and sisters can respond different in the same household. Have you noticed that? Some could take that experience and they say, for the rest of their lives, getting a deal is the way to go. It gets them excited. And others could be like me and says, you know what? I don't want a deal. I want to pay fair price for whatever it is that I want. I want it when I want it. I don't want to wait till December to buy the car. I'm going to buy the car when I feel like buying the car. And I want the car I want, not the one I can afford. And I learned through Jim Rohn, he finally gave me words with this that said, if you'll become what it is that you're supposed to become, the greatest value in getting is not the getting, it's the becoming what you need to become in order to be able to get, to be able to pay fair price. He finally gave me words for that, to be able to say, no. See, a lot of people join network marketing and they want to get lucky, really. So if you set a goal to make $1 million a year in network marketing, and it is an attainable goal, it's a high goal, but it's an attainable goal, the $1 million isn't the reward. It's you becoming a $1 million person that'll be the reward. You can get the millions over and over and over again, no matter what the circumstance. So, back to my story. I barely escaped high school. C minus average. I was one of the kids that made the top 75% of the class possible. I failed a shop class in the last semester. I had to do some negotiations in order to be able to get out. I think they got together, huddled together, and said, you know what? Do we really want him back? Let's go ahead and let him go. And I applied for college. College that all of my friends were applying to, and they all got accepted, every one of them. I didn't. And I got my rejection letter the day of my high school graduation party. And I remember standing in the garage reading this letter saying, all my friends are going to go, and I'm not. All right, well, let's see what I'm going to do. So I went to community college, which was, if you had money, you could go. You know, a little bit of money, you could go. They didn't look at your SAT scores or anything. They didn't look at your grade point average, and I got in. Woohoo! I got accepted. Everyone gets accepted. Don't get too excited. And I did it actually to play football. And my friend David and I, we both played football, and I decided I was going to go play football. So I worked out like crazy in the summer. We went to Normandale Community College to play football, and signed up for my classes, and lived in the basement of a friend's house that lived close to there, and had a motorcycle that was an ancient brown pinstriped motorcycle in the winter in Minnesota, that I'd drive this thing the 2 miles to the community college and back, and went out for the team, and I made the team. Second string. I wanted to be linebacker. That wasn't going to work when I saw those monsters that I was up against. But I made the team as a second string center. So I played that in high school. And which meant I went against the first string defense every day in practice. And I'm telling you, the team that I was on was undefeated. They won their bowl game 49-0 at the end of the year. and they were full of all-world ex-convicts. It was like the longest yard, man. There's one guy I had to go against. His name was Brinks House. He was 6'6", 255, all-American, and had been out of prison for 6 months, okay? I'm not kidding. And he thought I was the funniest thing ever. This is fun. All right. One time he tackled me and the quarterback, cracked two ribs. I was up like this, bam, cracked two ribs. So I'm like 2 months in. I made the team, okay? I got a separated quadricep muscle on my right-hand side. I got a separated shoulder on my left-hand side and two cracked ribs. You see these people that play through cracked ribs? I'm sorry, I don't know how they do that until they have major drugs, because they did not have major drugs when I was there. You know, they just tried to play with a flak jacket. Yeah, right, flak jacket. So at this point, I'm sitting in the, like Rudy from the movie, you know, I'm sitting in the training room, this arm up like this, wrapped, this thing all wrapped because I can barely breathe, my knee is swollen purple, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm probably not going to go pro. This is awful. So since there was no other reason to go to college for me, I dropped out. I have a 2.0 GPA. I have 8 credits to my name. I started with 16 credits, and I found out you could drop credits, and they didn't even care. You just had to pay for it. I was like, sweet. This is great. So that's my official college resume. So I go from there, and I end up in a bunch of dead-end jobs. I psych myself up and I tell myself this story. You know, that's fine. College isn't for me. I'm going to go make my fortune in the world. I'm going to make my mark on the world. World, get out of my way. I'm going to tear this thing up. And I proceeded to have 18 jobs prior to getting involved in network marketing in 4 years. That's not easy to do. I mean, if I set that as a goal for you, think about it. You have to find the job. You have to apply for the job. You have to get accepted to the job. You have to get a little training for the job. Start work. Get fired. Find the next job. I did that 18 times. For real. I was a dock boy at a boat rental business. I was a bag boy. I bagged groceries at Super Value grocery store. I roofed houses until I almost died. Roofing houses. Anybody in here ever roof houses, put roofs on houses? Anybody still do it? Not a single hand up the second time. You know why? You're going to die. Just give it enough time. It's going to happen. Any of those guys that raise their hand, just go ask them, hey, do you have any stories? They'll go, oh, I have some stories. My last day roofing, I'll tell you quickly. I'm up on this roof. It's 3 stories up, this house. It's pitched pretty steep. And I'm tearing it off. And the 3 stories up, I'm up above the garage. There's a tuck under garage. So there's 2 stories and then the under the garage thing. So I'm tearing off the nails and I'm up on the top. And it's really old, really smooth hardwood. And I'm tearing the nails out, and I kind of get to the bottom, and there's this rickety gutter. And I'm like, okay, I got to get back up. So I start crabbing my way backwards, you know, and I get about halfway, and I start to slide. And I'm picking up steam, and you don't yell. When you're about to die, you don't yell. That's just in the movies. You don't yell when it's really happening. So I'm crabbing up and I start sliding. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm sliding, and I'm going, I'm looking at the, you know, a million things can go through your head in 3 seconds. One is, will the gutter hold me? No, it won't. 2 is, can I stop myself? No, I won't. 3, I'm thinking, and I have this hatchet for moving the house in my hand. So I turn around and I just go, boom. And it went right through a knot hole. Because it would have bounced right off, I think. So it's right through the knot hole. My legs are right here hanging off the end. And I'm holding on. Then you yell. Somebody come save me. So they pulled me up. I went down and I sat down on the ground like my eyes are, you know, big as saucers in a coma. Said, you know what? For $5 an hour, I don't know if this is really the place where I need to be. This might not be my future. So that was my last day roofing houses. I cooked steaks at T. Wright's restaurant. I was a busboy at Perkins restaurant. One of the most miserable places because you know what? My dad said, go get a job. I don't care. Get a job. If they're hiring, get a job. Start working somewhere, get a job. So I got a job at Perkins restaurant, which is kind of like a Denny's up in Minneapolis. And it was where everyone from church went every single time after church. And I was bussing tables, and they scheduled me every single time after church. And it was the most, they're like, oh, Eric, how's it going? And I got my brown smock on. I'm not hosting. I'm not pretending I'm somebody. I'm cleaning up dirty dishes. It was miserable. I hated it so much. I sold the Cambridge diet plan. There was a diet powder back in the day called the Cambridge Diet. Few of you might have heard this story. My mom was selling it. And they had these, you know, it was like a tin filled with powder. And you would make these shakes and you'd eat those shakes instead of a meal. And they were selling this Cambridge Diet thing. And my mom had a suitcase filled with these little diet tins. So I'm sitting at home watching General Hospital. No money. All my friends are off at college. And I say, you know what? I bet I could go sell this diet program. We lived kind of on a rough side of the tracks, but we lived close to some fairly wealthy people. So I never sold anything in my life, never wanted to sell anything in my life. I said, okay, you know what? I'll put on my one little JCPenney suit that I have. And I'm going to get in the family truckster, the station wagon, you know, with the wooden panels on the side. And I'm going to take that Cambridge diet and I'm going to go knock on doors until I find somebody who wants to lose a few pounds. I'm just going to do it. So I get in, put my little suit on, and I put my little Cambridge diet program suitcase in the thing, in the car, and I drive to the nice neighborhood. And then I drive through the nice neighborhood. And then I drive back through the nice neighborhood. And I drive around, and I don't like that house. We'll start with a different house. This neighborhood looks a little sleepy. Let's go over here. And I drove for about an hour until I finally said, this is stupid. I got to stop and at least do something. So I get out of the car. Can I borrow your purse? So I get out of the car. And I got my little suitcase, and there's this big driveway up to a house, and the driveway's probably, I don't know, it's 50 yards, 60 yards, it's a ways. So I'm halfway to the house, you know, getting up my courage, figuring out, hi, I'm here, you know, take pity on me, buy some stuff. I've seen the pitch before, you know. We're here from the inner city. We're here to sell pencils, to raise money for, da, 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 you know what I mean? And I always buy every time. Ever since this incident, I buy every time. So I'm halfway up to the door, and around the corner comes a Doberman Pinscher. And he's just looking. And his lips curl up over his teeth, and I hear this low growl. He takes two more steps. I realize there's no leash. So I'm like, okay. I take one step back, and he is going full out His hind legs are in front of his front legs. He never even barked. Okay? I am running in my JCPenney suit to the station wagon. Please get me to the family truckster. Anything. Help me survive. I get back, but I can't. I grab for the door and I can't quite get it because he's jumping for my head. I take the briefcase and I swing it. Boom! I hit him full in the head, spun him around. I get the door open. He goes for my feet. The briefcase, boom, I hit him again. He spins around. I barely get him. Bam! And I close and he's on the window going, I'm going, oh my God. So I've joked for years that the Cambridge diet plan saved my life, right? True story. True story. I'll tell you what happened to me, what that did to me. Do you think I went to the next house? I'm done forever. Somebody says, sell something. I go, all I hear in my ears are, no, hide me somewhere inside your office. That comes into play later on when I get introduced to network marketing. Believe me, psychic damage was created in my brain. So I went home. I never even told anybody I left. Until years later, packed it back, you know, Cambridge diet, whatever, Mom, love you. I mean, I crawled under the covers for a day, you know, turned the TV on and just turned my mind off. From there, I was a host at the Roadhouse Restaurant. My job was to be there at 6 a.m., write the specials up on the board, and then welcome people in for breakfast. Big problem with that. They opened at 6 a.m., so because I am who I am, that's not a good time. So it didn't last very long there. I won't give you all of them, but I was a waiter at Ember's Restaurant. I got fired after I had eggs blow up in a lady's face. Do you want to hear that story real quick? I'm at the Ember's Restaurant. It's like a Minnesota thing, okay? It's, again, it's like a Denny's. And I'm waiting on tables, and this perfect little 80s couple comes in. Big hair mom, big hair, little 7-year-old kid, and dad, perfectly combed hair dad, and they're in there for their little breakfast. It's kind of after the breakfast rush, and we come in, and, hey, everybody, can I take your order, and, you know, and they take their order, and she says, I want poached eggs firm. Poached eggs firm. Got it. I understand. Said, no, do you understand? I really want poached eggs firm. I said, absolutely. You know what I do? I write it down here. I bring it back to the cook, and they see poached eggs firm. They cook it how they cook it. I bring it to you. That's what you do, right? So she says, okay. So I go back and I bring out their breakfast. Here it is. Boom, hand it off. And she says, does this look firm to you? Does this look firm to you? And I'm like, I don't eat poached eggs, but if that's not firm to you, I'd be happy to bring it back and have them take care of it. So I bring it back to the cook, who I swear on my life had two huge hairs on the palm of his hand. Big, thick ones. And they had to have gloves, special gloves on when he cooked because the owners just thought it was the most freakish thing ever. I don't know why I told you that piece of it. It's probably not relevant other than you don't want to have breakfast. But she says it's not firm. And he says, okay. And he cooks it a little while longer and I bring it back out. She's irritated now because everybody else is eating and she's not into her breakfast. And she said, this is still not firm. Does this look firm to you? Does this look firm to you? And I'm like, So I bring it back. He says, it's not firm. He says, fine. Puts it in the microwave. Cranks it up. Looks firm to me. I bring it out. No sooner do I set it down in front of her, and it explodes. Boom, 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 boom. Like five times. There's hair hanging down, her big 80s hair. There's eggs hanging, dripping. So step one, the son, who can't laugh in front of his mom, falls sideways on the bench and slides under the table. Step two, dad can't hold it together. Step three, I can't hold it together. Step four, Eric's out of there. You know, it's like, hey, you know, this didn't work out. So anyway, the things that happen in restaurants, most of them you don't want to know. From there, I went to become a janitor at a community center. I cleaned out garbage at a community center. I was a courier for a shoe sales company till I crashed the car. True story. They couldn't keep me on because they would raise the insurance, you know, for the whole company if they kept me on. So, but that was owned by my brother-in-law, so he opened up a shoe sale company. So I went and sold shoes for a little while. I went and became a peanut vendor at the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. Peanuts, get your peanuts. Got fired. True story, absolutely happened. How do you get fired from selling peanuts, right? I mean, two things happened. I sold peanuts and I sold Cokes. First one was the Cokes, the Coke incident. I had a thing of Coke and I walk up, you know, who wants Coke? Coke, do you want a Coke? Blah, 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 blah. Well, halfway through, I've got to go to the bathroom. How do you go to the bathroom? You got a thing of Coke, right? And the way it is, you get a ticket, and you have to bring back the ticket or the cash, or you owe them for the thing of Coke. I have no money. So I went in to the stall in the bathroom. I set the Coke down. And all those dirt bags in the rest of the room grabbed my whole thing. Choo, 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 choo. I'm like, hey, 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 put that Coke back. The Coke was gone. 40 of them. I don't have any money. So I go to my manager and say, hey, I had to go to the bathroom. They stole all my Coke. They said, that, hey, that's your responsibility. You got to work it off. Okay, says that's step one. Step two is I'm selling peanuts. Peanuts, get your peanuts. And I would throw the peanuts. And if you couldn't catch it, you'd get it for free. Hey, here's your peanuts. Throw it around. And a Twins game, I threw it, and it bounced off the guy's hand. Somebody hit him, and it bounced off his hand. It hit a little lady in the cheek. Now, it didn't hurt her. It was a little bag of peanuts, not like the huge bags like they have today. Smaller bag of peanuts. It hit her in the cheek, but she was not pleased. And her husband was not pleased. And I went up, and I said, you know, hey, I'm sorry. He was a bad catch. He should have caught that bag of peanuts. Can I give you some free peanuts? I'm already in the hole with my boss, but can I give you some free peanuts or something? And after talking for a few minutes, they said, okay, you know, it's fine, it's fine. Well, I come back in the next time, my manager says, he said, did you hit a little old lady in the face with peanuts? I said, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't like, it didn't draw blood or anything, you know? He said, well, her husband has filed a lawsuit against the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome, the food concession company, and the Minnesota Twins. And part of the lawsuit is, if they fire you, they drop everything. I said, well, it was nice working with you. I went across town where they did the ice capades in Disney on Ice, and I did the same thing there for about 2 weeks till they said, we heard about you. For real. I'm building a nice resume, though, huh? Nice resume. From there, I managed a suntanning business, Ultra Bronze, suntanning business, owned by my father and his partner. And I painted houses because they got into real estate, did my house painting career. And then I sold residential real estate. That's the last thing I did before network marketing. And it did so well, I I only got the job because my dad and his partner owned the place, and they needed somebody to show these houses, and they had a bunch of houses. My first year, I made $45,000. Not bad, right? Age 22, you know, come on. Not bad, 1987. Problem was, I only spent 60. And I didn't save anything for taxes. So this is January, and I'm, you know, are you seeing a pattern here in my life up until this point? Is this person high up on your prospect list? $5 an hour guy, 20, you know, 18 jobs before he's 22, no college, no discipline, no experience. But my dad's partner one day says, you know, hey, come take a look. We're going to go at lunchtime. We're going to go to this guy Charlie's house, and we're going to take a look at this video. He's got something we might be able to make some money with. And I hear money, but more than that, I hear lunch. If I go with them, they usually buy. All right, I'm in. Lunch. So we pile in the car, get away from the real estate office, and we get there. And we watch this videotape, and I'm making fun of the videotape the whole time. I'm making fun of the product. I think this is the dumbest thing ever. I'm acting all cool. And until they said, you know, look, we're going to do this with or without you. We hope you do it with us, but if you don't do it, it's okay. You can go back to the office and keep selling. And I changed my tune real quick because I didn't want to get left behind. They were more powerful and successful than I was. If they were going to do something, maybe I could go along with them and benefit from it. And something happened, and this is an early lesson for your notes. Something happened when I walked out the room. I walked out, and we were getting ready to get in the car, and I was about, I don't know, 15 feet in front of John Joyce, who was my dad's partner at the time. And John was talking to Charlie, and John said, you know, see that kid? I think he's going to do better than all of us in this business. And I heard it. And I don't know if he did it on purpose. Still to this day. I don't know if he wanted me to hear it, but I heard it. And I believed it. And I said, huh. If he, as a millionaire, thinks that I've got something, maybe I can borrow that belief. And I will tell you, that phrase that came out of his mouth kept me in the business for the first 6 months. Without that phrase, I'd have been gone. If he would have said, yeah, I don't know about that kid. I hope this can be an answer for him. When I hit my tough time, and you'll hit your tough time, I've hit my tough time. When that happened, I would have just bought that story instead of the one that said, no, I believe he's the one. He's Neo. He's the one. And before that movie, The Matrix, came out, I believed I was Neo. I was the one. I was developing. I still had my stuff. I hadn't stepped into myself yet, but I was that one. My first month's check, this was with a company where today's companies, the checks that you build are actually real checks because you don't have big buy-ins and you don't have expensive qualifications typically today. In the company that I got involved with, you had to do $5,000 in personal sales every month in order to get a check. So it was challenging, very challenging. But you could earn some money pretty quick because you bring a handful of people in, it can create some pretty good volume fast. My first month's check was $7,454.73. I still have a copy of it. My second month's check was $12,244. Guess how much of it you think I spent? All of it. Every penny, man. Because the next one's going to be huge, I'm sure. Look at you draw those two on a map. It's going up, baby. And I realized one really important thing, another lesson for your notes. From time to time, you might be in the right place at the right time. You might be there when a country opens up. Or you might be there when, you know, there's momentum and all you have to do is be busy. You don't have to be good. And by being busy and being around other people and you're plugged into the right situation and timing and positioning, your income might take a lucky jump. But if you don't become as a person, whatever your income is, the income's going to come back to whatever you are. So if you've had higher income in the past in network marketing and you haven't been able to get back to it, it's about you. It's not about the timing and positioning. It's the difference between amateurs and professionals. I was a rank amateur. I was really a poser for the first 3 months. Because guess what my third month's check was? If you go back to my jobs, my 18 jobs, my average job was about 90 days per job. My average income was about $5 an hour. So my third month's check was $1,098.60. And I was furious. I was stuck. I didn't know what I could do because I'd walked away from real estate. As soon as I got that first check, as soon as I knew the first check was coming, real estate was over. So I got $1,098 and I had my blame list ready to go. My upline said they were going to support me. They didn't do nothing. My downline said they were going to work. Bunch of lazy liars. They say this product sells itself. That's not true. Meetings here are crap anyway. When was the last time somebody trained me? I had my list. And for 72 hours, I quit. I quit. I'm done. Until I realized I had nowhere to go where I could make as much money as I could make going back to the thing that I was really angry at and facing it. And I will tell you, for the next 30 days, that's what I did. I got out of bed angry. I went to build my network marketing business angry. I tried to hide it best I could, but I did it for 12 hours a day, hating it the entire time. Hating it. Mostly, the anger was at me. And I will tell you, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I kind of felt like this was my last chance. And that sounds silly to say at age 23, but I felt like maybe this was my last chance. I'd been given all these other chances. I'd been given all these opportunities with a great family, and I blew it, and great educational system, and I blew it, and all these opportunities with jobs, and I blew it, and I was developing a rap sheet, not a resume. And I thought, you know, maybe this is my last chance. This is a big test for me. And you know what was the greatest gift that ever happened to me? If somebody would have shown up and said, I'll give you a job right now today for $50,000 a year, but you have to work for me for the rest of your life at $50,000 a year, I'd have taken it. I'd have taken it. And I would be miserable today. But thank God, the Garth Brooks song, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. Nobody showed up. I don't tell this very often, but there was a time and I was driving home to my parents' house because I had no money. I was embarrassed. I was behind on life. I was behind on my bills. I was behind on my promises. And I was, you know, was working hard. I was still working on my blame list. And I literally got so angry at God that we had it out. I don't know if you've ever done that, but I literally pulled over and screamed at God in the sky. I got out of the car. I don't know if you've ever been there. But I said, you know what? I'm not living like this anymore. I'm tired. Will you give me a break? Please. Will you? And you know what I think God did at that point? He or she just smiled, knowing that He'd already given me the break, that I was on the journey, that the discovery was happening inside of me. It wasn't going to be someone discovering me, someone. That it was a journey I had to take on my own in order to be able to get there. That was At that time, it didn't seem like a turning point because I just was still mad, still upset, got back in the car and drove down the road feeling like an idiot. But later I realized that was a turning point to be able to say, God just said, I love you, but you got some stuff to figure out. I've given you a tool to do it. I've given you the best profession in the world to find yourself and start the journey. Let go of the blame list. Let go of the viruses. You know what I realized in the first year? I had 3 huge mental viruses in my head. Any of you know anything about computers? A virus in your computer can really mess with things, yeah? A 1-1 turns into a 0 and it can change everything. 3 viruses in my head. One was the blame virus. I was a professional at saying, it's not me. It's not me. It's them, it's this, it's circumstance, and it's the weather, it's the economy, it's my bosses, it's the educational system. They didn't do a very good job of me. It was my coaches, it was my friends, it was my family. How can you expect me to succeed with a family like this? I never had any real difficulties in my life. How can I expect to succeed without having to have any real difficulties in my life? I had my blame list. And I had to learn how to take responsibility for everything that happened to me and shape my life instead of blaming, because I found out there's no money in blaming. And I needed money. So I took responsibility. That was the first virus. The second virus, this was a big one, I wanted to get the results first and then I'd work hard. Give me the promotion and then watch my smoke. Give me the raise and then watch my attitude change. Give me a new rank. Once I have a new rank inside of my company, then I'll step into my leadership. Until then, I'll wait. I worked at a boat rental business when I was a kid. And I remember there was a guy who got like $250 an hour. I got like $250 an hour. He always paid us in cash, this guy, $250 an hour. And I'd go clean up these boat rental businesses or these boats when they come in for people fishing. And there was a guy there that made $4 an hour. And I went to the boss and said, you know, I've heard he makes $4 an hour. How can I make $4 an hour? I'd like to make $4 an hour, which is a great question, by the way. You know, how can I get to that next rank? How can I make more than I'm making now? How can I get to that six-figure level? How can I become the world's best inviter, the world's best recruiter? How can I do all these different things? And he smiled and he said, Eric, here's what he does. He knows this, he knows this, he knows this, he does this, he does this, he does this, he takes care of this for me, I don't have to worry about that for me, and because of that, he's worth $4 an hour. I said, well, let me ask you a question. If I do the same things, will you pay me $4 an hour? Answer, absolutely. So the next day, I get up, I'm there early. I'm the earliest guy there. And I'm working. By the time the first person shows up, and everybody's like, what happened to this guy? And I'm busting it all day, and I'm taking care of all kinds of stuff, and I'm saying hi to all the customers, and I'm doing everything. I mean, I got it dialed. The end of the day, I'm spraying down the docks. Everything's pristine. Parking lot's picked up. The whole deal. I go to the boss. Well, how'd I do? He said, Eric, you did great. Everybody commented today how great you did. Well done. I said, well, you told me if I did this that I could get paid $4 an hour. And he said, Eric, look, it was a great day. But you're going to have to show me that you can do that on a consistent basis before I'm going to be ready to make that move. And you know what I did internally? I said, oh yeah? You're trying to take advantage of me, huh? You're trying to hold me down, aren't you? You're trying to keep me under your foot, aren't you? You're never going to let me get up there, are you? You're just trying to get that extra buck and a half from me as long as you can, aren't you? Rich guy talking to a little kid. I see where I fit in this world. Next day, I show up a few minutes late. I wait till somebody tells me what to do. I put in the minimums. I said, you know what? If I'm getting paid $2.50 an hour, that's what you're going to get. $2.50 an hour. I showed him. Now, I repeated that everywhere. When you make me a manager, then I'll really pound it. I know I'm a busboy now, but when you make me a server, then I'll do it. You know? So the biggest lesson for me is I realized life doesn't work that way anywhere. You got to come in, pay your dues. You got to work hard first. And then the universe will get out of its way and it'll pay you. But in network marketing, people join and they immediately want an exact return of money for their time. And that's not how it works. You're going to have to invest a lot of money. You're going to be underpaid for quite a while. Then you'll be fairly paid for a pretty short period of time. And then you're going to be overpaid. Today, I'm overpaid. There's no corporation in the world that would pay for me how much I make. For what I do? Nobody. Nobody. And if they did, I've worked as a consultant for a company making $1 million a year. It was the most miserable experience of my life. Because, again, they have your foot on your neck the whole time. Versus, you know, hey, you did that yesterday. What are you going to do tomorrow? You know, blah, 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 blah. Same kind of stuff. For the freedoms that you get and the money that you get, it's unbelievable. So that was the second virus. What's the third virus? The third virus. Oh. The hope to get lucky virus. That was a big one for me. I would much rather get away with something than earn it. There's something in my DNA that got excited about cutting a corner and getting lucky and figuring something out. And I'd much rather sneak into a room like this than pay the $50 to get into a room just for the thrill of it. And I finally learned, when you shift that and say, I would much rather earn everything than get away with anything. I would much rather be good enough to attract 10 high-level, high-income, high-earning people in my business that I personally bring into my business than to hope to luckily find one or two. That's a different mindset. This is part of my becoming. You know, those viruses, and all of you have some viruses in your brain. You got to look at those and say, what are the things that are holding me back and what can I do to change them? The hardest thing to do today was to try and get this, all that I'm going to share with you today, into 8 hours. It's the hardest thing because really, it's a 3-day seminar is what it is. It's about 30 hours worth of content, but we're going to do our best. I've gotten, in the last hour here, I've gotten half of the first session in. My biggest thing that I wanted to say to you as far as my story, and my story continues today, the biggest thing that I want to say to you that is your past does not equal your future. That's true for the super successful in this room, and that's true for the people who haven't had success in this room. That's true for the people who are grinding it out in this profession. Your past doesn't have to equal your future, only by choice. If you decide to take it to another level, you can take it to another level. If you decide to reinvent yourself, you can reinvent yourself. Some people say, well, people can't change. I'm sorry, that's not true. Leaders are born, not made. I'm sorry, that's not true. If leaders were born, what happened to me then? My 18 jobs and my C-minus high school and my 2 credits or 4 credits or 8 credits, whatever I have, in community college, my blame list and my bad programming and all the things that I had to get through. How was I able to make this thing happen? Because people can change. People can grow. People can get better. People can do things different. So I will say to every audience listening to this, if you're brand new, never been involved in network marketing, your past doesn't have to equal your future. If you've never had success in your life at anything, your past doesn't have to equal your future. If you've been in network marketing and you've struggled and you haven't figured out how to crack the code and you've been frustrating watching other people do it, when you haven't done it to the level that you want to do it. Your past doesn't have to equal your future. When you have had success in your life, and then you desperately need to get back there, and you're going, you know what? I paid my dues. Your past doesn't equal your future either. You think you paid the price, you're going to have to pay it again. This is a new skill set. It's a new skill set that you have to develop. Too many people rely on their past if they've had success to be able to create success for them in the future. That's like hoping to get lucky. Isn't it better to develop the skills so you don't need to get lucky? Wouldn't that be better? That if the world blew up, something happened with your company, something happened with your product, you still had the skills and you could very quickly replace whatever it is that you lost. That's what happened with me. My skills made a place for me. It wasn't timing and positioning. It's my skills did. So we're going to spend time talking about today is those skills. I will also tell you this. I've made many, many millions of dollars in the network marketing profession. I'm actively building in it today. I say that because I'm not just one of the trainers telling you that, you know, what sounds good from the front of the room. There's a million generic trainers out there saying what sounds good from the front of the room. The people who really build the business laugh at those people. Those people sell a lot of stuff, but they don't get a lot of respect from the people really building it. They prey on the fears of the people, the new people coming into the business, but they have no experience. I'd want to learn from somebody who's doing it and has done it. Not 30 years ago either. I'd want to listen to somebody who's actually sponsored somebody in the last year, actually recruited somebody in the last 6 months, has gone to a presentation where there was no guests and nobody showed in the last 90 days. I want to listen to that person versus somebody talk about what they did 10, 15 years ago. There's a difference. I'm not the best at this, but what I think I am is one of the best collector of ideas inside of network marketing. What you see when you see Network Marketing Pro is just an idea that I collected and I passed on. An idea that I collected and I passed on. And all of today is going to be about ideas collected and passed on and used to create a framework to help you become a professional. I've learned that from being a low-level distributor, a medium-level distributor, a high-level distributor. I've been a president of a company, I've been an owner of a company, I've been consultant to the profession. And even doing all that stuff, I will just tell you, the only way to go is to be a high-level income earner in network marketing. It's the only place to be. You could offer me ownership in any company in the room and I would decline. I don't want it. There's nothing like the freedom of building your own dream. There's nothing like the freedom of building what you want. There's nothing like the freedom of creating real residual income. We do have a better way. It's not just a slogan. It's a fact. We have to do better at telling other people. We have to do more about telling other people. And part of that is getting our heads right. What I want for the rest of this session is for you to become so powerful that the world naturally attracts to you. So confident that people are always asking for your advice, whether or not they're involved in your profession. So amazing and skilled that people would pay for your time just to be able to have some of your ideas rub off. What I hope more than anything is you steal all of my ideas. All. Give me credit one time and then keep them forever. That's the rule inside network marketing, if you didn't know. That's the general rule. We give them credit once and then after that, if we keep it. So really what I want more than anything is I want all of you to be able to develop all this stuff, get an arsenal of information, build up your skill set, take your business and your life to a completely different level. And if you do, then you're ready to become a network marketing professional. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
This concludes CD 1, and you are now ready for CD 2, titled Success Concepts. Thank you for listening to Eric Worre's Go Pro, How to Become a Network Marketing Professional audio album. For more business building resources, visit networkmarketingpro.com. This audio recording is copyright protected through U.S. and international laws. No portion may be reproduced, duplicated, or distributed in any form. Thank you.